Hello and welcome to the Gospel Bluth. This is a podcast about all things Don Bluth. My name is Lily Masterdemus. I have no background in film, animation, graphic design, or whatnot. I am just a Don Bluth enthusiast, and in Bluthiest, if you will. And I am so excited. This is the very first episode, and I have a very, very special guest with me today to talk about the film that we watched for it. So to help me discuss the classic 1982 film Secret of NIMH, please welcome Sasha Heinzman to the podcast. Hi, Sasha.
Thank you so much.
I'm excited.
Whenever I get really excited and stoked on a subject like I am about this movie, I inevitably will just start to babble about it and recall things, and it's almost like the thought comes too fast, so I'll be like, and you remember that part when he did this? The dagger, and he threw it, and it went right into his back.
Oh my sweet God. Yes, I have so many things to say about Auntie Shrew and, like, Justin and the rest.
Yeah, I did a lot of, I rewatched it. I have probably seen this movie, and this is not exaggerating, 150 times since childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And because we had it on VHS, and I found out with some deep dive research that was one of the reasons why it became such a cult classic. It was one of the first animated films to have like wide distribution on VHS.
Yeah.
So we have rewatched it at least that many times, and then very recently rewatched it because I knew I was going to do this with you. And I have a lot of opinions about all of these great actors who did these roles. So,
oh yes, and like, what a cast too!
What a cast! And like, as I was doing my research, one of the things, and I'm sure you want to talk about Don Bluth a little bit, but one of the things that he was trying to do with this movie was take it back to what he referred to as the golden age.
Yes.
And yes. So characterizations and the characters of the story became like the focal point, not just the style. And I love that.
Oh yeah. There's so much we could go into about like Don Bluth's just vision for animating. So before I get into just like a little bit about Don Bluth.
Don Bluth. it's a tough mouthful to say.
It really is. A little bit about Don Bluth. There it is. What is your, like, do you have a connection to Don Bluth films? Like, do they make you feel something? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I feel that I've as I've told you, I have watched all of the major ones, except for the 2000 film Titan A.E., which we don't have to discuss. But every other one, definitely watched. In particular, Secret of NIMH was like one of the first animated films I remember watching on VHS at home or my grandmother's home. American Tail, Land Before Time, all these movies, those three especially, and definitely watched All Dogs Go to Heaven and Anastasia 2.
Yes. But
those first three, I mean, I remember watching American Tail. That was the kind of movie that they would like wheel out the TV during the school gathering. They'd pop the movie in, they'll be like, children, this is about immigration in America, and there's a mouse in it, and you'll learn something. And I remember being really connected to the music in all of them, like the score was really like lush and instrumental, which I love. And they were also like a lot of Disney films at the time too, I feel they were all really sad or dark or had like this dark, like shadow side that they explored. I think that was my connection. And that's not unusual for films of the 80s when I grew up. There were so many films like Neverending Story, Dark Crystal, all those movies. I feel like there was so much like really sinister, grotesque animation and also like Muppetry and puppetry happening. I feel like it was just this really wonderful time to grow up in where they felt like they didn't have to shelter kids from darkness. They're like, oh, by the way, things die.
Yeah.
And are scary, but also beautiful. And I think that's my main connection. Like I wrote in my notes for this movie, like I have so many notes. I was like 5 minutes in, kids know that Mrs. Brisby's husband is dead and her son is going to die. The end of notes.
Yeah, it is like truly wacky. Like when you look at like children character or like child characters in Don Bluth movies and like compare them to like earlier like Disney movies with like child characters where, and I'm like not like 70s or excuse me or like 60s but like even into the 90s, but just like Don Bluth kids are always like, yeah, some shit's gonna go down and we're just gonna have to like deal with it, versus like everything's great and like, oh no, conflict, I've never dealt with conflict before.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of Disney movies, there were, you know, there was death and some scary stuff too.
Yeah,
in these movies, you know, like Bambi's mom dying and you know, evil witches and sorceresses to like overcome. This is different. It was like,
it's a real, it's like a more realistic danger of like, oh, we're gonna lose our home and our brother is sick and could die, versus like a witch is gonna get me. Kind of.
Exactly. Yeah. And there are magical elements to all of them, but it's very grounded in reality. So like American Tale 2, which I know we're not talking about today, but like he loses his parents. And I'm like, and I remember as a kid watching that and being like, oh my God, like what if I got separated from my parents or whatever. And that it is incredibly real. And it's, they, you know, you see yourself in these little animal characters, and I guess that says a lot about how I've developed and my sense of imagination. But yeah, they're all very human animals is what I'm saying.
That's right, Sasha. That's right.
it's like animals are humans too, you know? Animals are friends, not food. I shouldn't say that. I'm no longer a vegan, so. But anyway, that was, I think too, like, that was a very important part of me in like, teenhood, like, being like, I can't eat them. They're my friends. They're my singing happy friends.
They have a song in their hearts just like I do.
Yeah, and then I became an adult and got over it, so.
as we all do at some point with our lives.
It's true.
So, before we hop into talking about this movie itself, I just want to give like a brief introduction to Don Bluth, because I don't know, maybe folks are listening to this, fingers crossed that anyone is listening at all, but maybe folks are listening to this and going like, oh, who is Don Bluth? Sounds like a nerd.
You have to educate the children.
So Don Bluth was born in El Paso, Texas. In 1937, he moved to California in 1954, with his family. He went to Brigham Young in Utah for a year, before he got a job at Walt Disney Productions. So, he worked for Disney up until 1979. So he, worked on Sleeping Beauty, he worked on Winnie the Pooh, Pete's Dragon. A very notable one that he listened to, that he worked on was Robin Hood, which, if you are like a Bluth fan or someone who watched Disney's Robin Hood, you know, like, there's a hot fox, there are hot animals.
And I have.
Oh, yes. And the moment I learned that he...
whole cast.
Yes. The moment I found out he worked on Robin Hood, I was like, makes sense now. Goddamn.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Now you know.
Now I know.
So he, in 1979, Don Bluth and a few other animators from Disney left Disney to start their own animation studio, which was Don Bluth Productions, which he started because he was disheartened with the way Disney was being run, and he didn't really like the way they were animating their movies, and he just felt like he could do it better. Essentially, like, you mentioned it earlier, he wanted to return to the golden age of animation that focused more on story than it did like the way it was animated. So he
cut corners, you know, he wanted to do a classic style.
Exactly. And it really shows. Like, it is such a distinct style of animation, and it is so beautifully done. Secret of Nim was his very first directorial debut at Don Bluth Productions. It was released in 1982.
Oh, what a year.
Well, a good year. I remember it well.
Mm-hmm.
And then... that would be followed by such hits as An American Tale, Land Before Time, All Dogs Go to Heaven, and more.
And the rest.
And the rest. So we're going to start with Secret of Nim because it's his very first one. It's definitely one of the darkest movies that he's ever made. It also is not a musical.
There's one great song in it.
Is that the lullaby?
It's the lullaby, and I forget what it's called. It's like Dream by Night and Live by Day. That's a Rush song. I don't know.
I said that. Maybe Rush covered it. I don't know.
If there was a Secret of Nim Rush crossover project, I'm buying that cassette.
Hell yeah. I'm buying tickets to that reunion show. Damn. Secret of Nim. Fun fact, based on a book. I did not know that.
I knew that, and I've read the book. So if you want to do a comparison, I have thoughts. The book is, in my opinion, not as fun, but we'll get to that later. I have some fun facts about that.
Oh, I would love to hear it. Because I just found that out, like, yesterday, and I was like, oh. But the book is called Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim, which was released in 1971 by Robert C. O'Brien. Mm-hmm. In the movie, Mrs. Frisbee is changed to Mrs. Brisbee because Don Bluth Company, or Don Bluth Productions, was nervous that the Whammo toy Frisbee would get upset.
Yep.
So... they had already recorded, like, pretty much all of the dialogue, especially with John Carradine as the Great Owl.
Yes.
So when they, like, finally heard back from Whammo's lawyers, they had to do, like, some really, like, quick cut-and-paste editing to make those Fs and Mrs. Frisbee in John Carradine's voice. Sound like bees. They had to, like, take bees from other things that he said and put them in.
Yeah, he's at a point, he's like, you're Mrs. Frisbee? Like,
yeah.
What? It's just how the Great Owl speaks.
Yeah, you know, he's a great owl. He's not an amazing owl, but he's great.
He's great and he's old.
He's old. Lest we forget. You can always tell when someone is old in a Don Bluth film by the facial hair they have and the the mustache and the eyebrows specifically.
A long, luxurious brow.
Mm-hmm.
And a flowing mustache.
I would love for the long, luxurious brow to come back.
It's kind of there, like folks like will feather their brows, but yeah, no, it's got to like extend.
It's got to drape. It's
it's got to drape, and then yeah, like with the villain, you know, Jenner,
yeah,
like also flowing, but also like evil. And like you look at him, you look at his brows, and you're like instantly,
yeah,
evil.
He's got those like evil, like arched dark brows, which immediately you're like, that guy's up to no good.
You look at him and you're like, that's a villain. He's a rat that looks like Dracula. He's like Dracula. He's a flowing cape. And yeah, and sharp pointy teeth, and yeah, he's beautifully animated. I love all the work they do on him.
He's very wolfish, very very wolfish.
Yes, no, 100%. And I love that attention to detail, like that characterization through design. And it's like, you know, not like you have to work off of stereotypes or whatever, but just like eye shape and face shape. You're like, oh yes, this person has a good heart, or they're garbage. looking at them.
There is no in between in these movies. There's always somebody who's, there's always like the good, pure at heart people and like the absolute fucking monsters.
Yeah, I'll say it. Good people are round.
Yeah.
In general.
Good people have the softer, like the softer features, and any evil person is like jagged. Or yeah. Crooked, or like very sharp edges.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. So yeah, you see a round person or a fluffy person, you're like, oh, I love them. They're wonderful.
They're so great.
Like our man Sullivan.
Our
today.
Oh, we love Sullivan. I feel like he didn't get his dues enough, you know? Like,
oh no, he had such a he could have gotten more screen time. That was one of the notes I wrote too. I was like, this is fast moving. It's 90 minutes, but it goes so fast, and it always leaves you wanting more. Like whenever I finish it, I'm like, I could just watch that again. I could just keep it rolling.
Yeah, well, for a movie that went straight to video, I feel like they had to keep it like 90 or below.
I think it wasn't straight to video. It was like one of the first animated films that had like a wide release in VHS. It was supposed to, I do know it was supposed to open like worldwide. There was a lot of controversy with it. I think it opened to like select theaters. You know, it was kind of like an art house movie. But then it like, it just did so well as a cult film because people would like rewatch. It was always on HBO in the 80s. You were just like, oh. There's Secret of NIMH again. It was like Beastmaster and Secret of NIMH.
Did you say Pagemaster?
No, Beastmaster.
Oh, I fucking love Beastmaster.
We could have a whole other pod about Beastmaster.
We absolutely could. Well, so, all right. So here's a brief plot. Here's a brief plot of The Secret of NIMH. So we are introduced to Mrs. Brisby, a field mouse who lives in a cinder block with her children, with her four children. She's got four kiddos. And they live at the edge of the field of Fitzgibbon's farm. Her husband, Jonathan, recently died. And her son, Timothy, has pneumonia. And they have to move out of the cinder block very, very soon because plowing time is approaching. And if they don't move, then their house will be destroyed and they'll all die. But when they discover that Farmer Fitzgibbon starts to plow earlier, Mrs. Brisby must devise another plan. So her new friend, the crow, Jeremy, takes her to meet the great owl, who tells her to visit a group of rats that live beneath a rose bush on a farm, and to ask for Nicodemus, their wise and mystical leader. Which she does, she goes to the rose bush, where she encounters the guard named Brutus, and then is led back by her, I hesitate to say friend, but by her friend Mr. Ages, where she meets Justin, the friendly captain of the guard, Jenner, a ruthless, power-hungry rat who is opposed to Nicodemus's plans, and finally Nicodemus himself. She learns about her husband's connection to Nicodemus and the rats of NIM. NIM stands for the National Institute of Mental Health. And she learns that the rats had undergone a series of experiments to boost their intelligence, which enabled them to escape and also slowed down their aging process. So even though they live only as rats, they need human technology to survive because that is just how smart they are. The rats have concocted the plan, which is to leave the farm and live independently of stealing the Fitzgibbons' electricity. Nicodemus gives Mrs. Brisby an amulet, tells her it will awaken when the wearer is feeling courageous. She
also says the weather.
Also the weather.
Yeah, it's like an app, you know.
Yeah, when the frost comes through and it's feeling a little frisky, a little courageous.
For sure.
Mrs. Brisby asks the rats to help her move her home, and they do that. Well, they agree to do that after her kind of convincing them to do so. And let's see. She's caught by the farmer's son while trying to drug Dragon, so they can complete the move. But she also escapes late at night. While the rats move the Brisby home, the kids are inside. Jenner, who is evil and wants the rats to remain in the rose bush, sabotages the ropes with his reluctant accomplice, Sullivan, which causes the assembly to fly apart and kill Nicodemus. Mrs. Brisby arrives and tries to convince the rats that Nim is coming and they must leave, but Jenner attacks her and attempts to steal the amulet. Sullivan alerts Justin, who rushes to Mrs. Brisby's aid. There is a sword fight, which ends with Sullivan killing Jenner before dying himself. When the Brisby house begins to sink into the mud, Justin and the rats are unable to raise it, but then the amulet kicks in and gives Mrs. Brisby the power to save her children, which she uses to lift the house, which has fully sunk into the mud, and move it to safety. The next morning, the rats have departed for Thorn Valley with Justin as their new leader, and Timothy begins to recover. Jeremy the Crow, the lovelorn crow, eventually meets Miss Wright, and it's a happy ending for all. That's not as brief of a plot thing as I would have liked, but here we go. I have run out of breath.
It's a lot. I don't know where you want to start with this, but if you want to talk about the amulet, I'm ready to talk about the amulet.
Well, let's start with the amulet.
Just real quick, because the amulet is not in the book.
That's right.
100% not in the book. And in the book, Mrs. Frisbee, as she's known in the book, is a character, but it's mostly about the rats and their journey to becoming more human-like, and it really highlights like how they've helped her. There's no mystical, magical elements at all. And I remember reading the book as a kid after seeing the movie. Maybe that's what ruined it for me, because after you've seen this like dark mystical movie, mm-hmm. you want it to be like that. I'm like, where's the amulet? And why isn't Nicodemus a wizard? Because none of that is true, but in the movie. But I feel that was something that Don Bluth added.
It is. So, yeah. So everything you said is very, very true. There was no magic, no mysticism, no amulet in the book. But when they were writing the movie, and essentially when they were creating the film, making the movie, whatever, Don Bluth made a bunch of changes to the story, most notably being the addition of mystical elements, which he kind of justified by saying, he was like, regarding magic, we really believe that animation calls for some magic to give it a special fantasy quality. So he made Nicodemus into a wizard to create more mystery. And the stone or amulet is just a method of letting the audience know that Mrs. Brisby has found courage of the heart. Magic, maybe. Spiritual, yes.
That's so beautiful.
And
so it's like a metaphor.
It is. It's just like, he says, the secret of Nim is really a story about Mrs. Brisby and her need to save her children. If the rats save her children, then she hasn't grown in the film.
Oh, wow. That is deep and important, because she is so scared the whole time. She is such a nervous, anxious character, which I do love, and she's still able to do these brave things.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, they just needed some sort of, like, physical representation of her heart chakra or something.
They needed to show that, like, she found the strength in herself and the power within herself to, like, save her kids, because you do get the sense when the movie begins that, like, she is just completely lost without Jonathan, and she's like scrambling to deal with moving her home and dealing with her sick kid, and now that she's alone she doesn't have that help, and like she's kind of very, very scrambled. But at the end of it, she has convinced an entire society of super intelligent rats to like help her move her home, but she has single-handedly saved her own home. She didn't even really seem to need their help if she had that courage and that power inside of her the whole time.
Sure. I mean, she needed the amulet, so she needed to go
to
Nicodemus.
Fair. You
know? But yeah, she had to do the journey. You know, she had to go through the journey. You know, it's the classic hero's journey. She had to go through all the bullshit,
mm-hmm,
to figure out it was all inside her the whole time, like Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
I feel like she's so much in her husband's shadow. Like, it's like Jonathan. And then, like, if you say Jonathan's name, everyone's like, ooh, Jonathan. Jonathan, mm-hmm, you know Jonathan? It's like, they don't even give her a first name.
Yeah.
She's just Mrs. Brisby. Or Mrs. Jonathan Brisby. She doesn't even get her own name.
That's a really good point.
So what's up with that is what I want to know. But I feel that fact aside, I think it's a very powerful feminist film. And she'll just do anything for her kids, like even if they're like drowning in a cement block in a pool of mud, she'll still go after them.
Yeah.
She just goes for it.
That is a great way to characterize Mrs. Brisby. It's like, she just goes for it. She sees like what she has to do and she just dives in.
She doesn't wait to like, she doesn't do research.
No, nope.
She just goes. She's like, I gotta go see Mr. Ages. I gotta go. All right, I'm gonna go here. It's basically just like it's like quest after quest.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Oh, you gotta go. It's like, oh, why am I meeting this like wacky crow character? Oh, you need the crow so you can go see the owl. I was like, I made a note here. I'm like, what is Jeremy even for?
Well, a lot of critics did not like Jeremy. They thought that Dom DeLuise was putting himself, was inserting himself too much into the film.
Oh yeah, 100. I mean, I don't know. What's your take on Jeremy?
So, I love Dom DeLuise. He shows up in so many of Don Bluth's movies.
True.
There's almost like, it's almost like you can't have a Don Bluth movie without Dom DeLuise, which mm-hmm. isn't inherently true, but he's just in so many, sometimes it feels like that. Jeremy, I just felt like was more comic relief and than an actual like important character. Because the movie is so dark.
If there was no Jeremy, it would just be like dying, death, somebody stabbed, somebody almost drowned. So you need that like little lift of like the wacky string loving, bauble loving.
Yeah.
Crow to just like get you out of yourself for a second.
I do love whenever he asks for the shiny and he refers to it as the shiny.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is such a Crow thing to say.
It's a Crow thing. It's a goblin thing. It's a golem thing. A little golem. Yeah. I feel like as a person, me, I tend to I don't love like wacky chaotic characters,
mm-hmm.
but I understand like they're, do you know what I'm saying? It's sort of like this is clearly a plant to make you laugh. And I'm like, ugh, like even as a kid, I was like,
yeah,
just like get back to Mrs. Frisbee and you know, and her drama with the rats. And oh, here's this Justin guy. Go back. I want the tension. I want the tension and the dramatic development.
Yeah. Yes.
Child. But, I can see that. I can see his place in the movie. It's like Mrs. Brisby's husband died. It's like, and they're just about like the plow's just about to come and get the house. Like we need some kind of levity in between these moments.
Yeah. And you know, he has a struggle of his own. He's lonely and he's looking for love because he's clumsy. And isn't that something we can all relate to?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just feel like I just remember having the thought even as a child being like, why don't you just like slow down? Why don't you just like think about what you're doing? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not the nature of a crow. The nature of the crow is to chase the shiny and to find a mate and to play with string. I also wrote that I love that there's a certain point where Jeremy calls, he doesn't know her name, so he calls Mrs. Brisby Miss Mouse. Miss Mouse, excuse me.
It is. I feel like... part of me wants to think that wasn't actually in the script, and that was just Dom DeLuise going, "I don't know, Miss Mouse."
Yeah, and he was just riffing. He was letting the artist come out.
Yeah, I love Dom DeLuise's voice. I feel like I have a crush on his voice, not so much like the characters that he plays in these movies, because they always do seem to be like. These like almost very annoying, frantic characters, but yeah, like
frantic.
Yeah. But that like Italian Jersey voice, I'm just like, yeah, that's very comforting.
Dom DeLuise is from Jersey.
I actually don't know, but that is just,
we gotta find out immediately.
I feel, I want to believe that he is.
I was going to say he's got to be like, you know, oh my God, he's from Brooklyn, New York.
Close enough, baby.
Close enough. And this headshot they have for him on his wiki is really a gift if anyone wants to check that out. Born in Brooklyn to Italian American parents. Wow, his dad was a garbage collector. I could just get into all of this. Wow.
I love that. Oh, so down to earth.
Down to earth. Yeah, no. You know what? You're changing my mind today. I came in a Dom DeLuise hater, and now I'm feeling like, yeah, I'm gonna rewatch all these films now so I can see his down home characterization, animals in all of these fine films.
Every animal he plays is from Brooklyn. It doesn't matter where, doesn't matter where the movie takes place. He is, his animal is from Brooklyn.
Yeah, I'm a cat from California. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm a crow in what could be the English countryside. What do you want to know?
Oh my God. Yeah, oh, that was another thing too. I made a note. I'm like, where is this?
Yeah.
Where is this land?
Because I think NIM is part of like the National Institute of Health, which would be in the UK, maybe?
Yeah, and I don't think anyone has like a straight up British accent. I guess maybe Nicodemus a little bit, because it's Derek Jacobi who plays him.
Auntie Shrew,
that's true. Yes.
Oh, let's talk about Auntie Shrew.
She is the, like I said before, the real MVP of this whole movie. She does so much.
She is holding this shit down.
She's holding this shit down, and in one of the very first scenes where you see the farmer trying to plow the field, she's the one who dismantles the plow.
Yeah.
She, like, single-handedly, like, stops the family from getting killed, and I feel like Mrs. Brisby is just too, like, freaked out to even acknowledge it. She's you know what? She's nosy, but she's caring.
Mm-hmm.
She gets shit done. She's, you know, she might not be, you know, what's the word? She's a little cranky,
mm-hmm.
but she's loving, you know, and I have to give it to Auntie Shrew for,
yeah,
really, really stepping up.
I have definitely had neighbors like her in the past, where she, you know, she's the kind of neighbor who just like invites herself over. She's going to come to your house while you're trying to like sit down and relax. And she's just going to like make herself comfortable and just complain about everything. But also somehow you will end up talking about life and she will give you some no nonsense advice.
Yeah. And she's the one who tells Mrs. Brisby to go to the owl. Which is, you know, which leads her to the rats. So she kind of gets she's like the NPC who gets everything rolling. She's like, I'm gonna tell you where to go now. This is what you got to do. she doesn't stand for any wacky crow shenanigans.
Nope.
When Jeremy comes, she's like,
she single-handedly just fucking ties that guy up. She goes, shut up.
She ties up that wacky crow, and she, I mean, I would trust her with my children if I had a one. I would trust her with my little mouse children.
Oh my God, yeah. I would like feel so safe with Auntie Shrew watching my four kids, even if one of them just constantly insults her.
Yeah, no, I would say Martin is an asshole.
Martin sucks. Well, so the Brisby kids are such, like, I feel like are the first introduction to a Don Bluth, like one of the many Don Bluth tropes. So here, I wrote this down. So there's always, an older sister. And she is always wearing like a big skirt and she has like a big bow either in her hair or like on her shirt. And then there's the middle brother who's like rambunctious and, just like very opinionated and hot-headed and like wants to be the man of the house.
Sure. He's got something to prove.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's the baby who's like the cutesy, like, baby.
Yeah. For lack of a better word.
Exactly.
Baby.
And like those three types of kids also appear in like Robin Hood, with like the rabbits and the little turtle.
Yes.
Like it's the same, that same kind of idea. And
yeah, like turtle is baby. Well, there's also a bunny baby too.
Yeah, there's bunny baby with the very like blah blah blah.
Yeah. And then there's you're totally right. It's like it's the same. It's 100% the same characters. Like the more level-headed older sister, and then the middle brother who like wants to go be a man and like, you know, go hook up with Maid Marian, even though he's seven.
Yeah, and then the little baby.
Vibe.
I don't know where Timmy fits in that though. I feel like Timmy is just kind of like this character off to the side.
I have opinions about this. Timmy, you ready for this?
I'm so ready.
Timmy is just Jonathan, but reincarnated. Go and watch this movie. Look at the footage from Nim when they show all the rats escaping. And you finally see Jonathan like in Nicodemus's magic ball thing. Timothy and Jonathan look exactly the same. They're animated exactly the same.
Oh, ooh. Okay.
Oh, this like, I saw that and I was like, oh, nice. Because then it's like, because like, you know, she's trying, I feel like Timothy was the son that reminded her of Jonathan. Like he seems, even though he's like sick for 90% of the movie, mm-hmm. he's like a little, he's like more gentle. He seems a little more soft, but in kind. And these were all qualities that her husband had. So yeah, that's my hot take on Timothy and where he fits.
That's really interesting. I wonder, like, where in the sequence of children he is. Because, like, he's older than the baby.
He's definitely older. I'm going to say he's between Martin and Cynthia.
Right.
The baby. Cynthia. Also, I have a note, Cynthia. Is Cynthia just wearing a big bow? That's it.
Yep.
That's her outfit, a big bow.
Every girl character has to wear a bow.
Yeah.
That's just how we do, Sasha.
But she wears the bow around her body, just like swathed around her body. That's it.
That's how you know she's a girl baby.
Sure. She's a little baby, little baby, and she's a girl.
Cynthia also had maybe my favorite line in the whole movie, which was when they're trying to free Jeremy from the ropes, and she just looks at him and goes, "Oh, the poor turkey fell down."
Yes. Yeah, it was so cute. I also love that they actually used, I think he does this for all his movies as well, he actually used children to voice the children, which, you know, it's not like a crazy concept, but it's like they actually sound like, you know, they're not just like kid actors, which I know they're kid actors. Like, you know who the two main actors who played the children were, right? Martin.
Will Wheaton is Martin.
Yes.
And I forget who the sisters are.
Well, I don't know who played Cynthia, but Teresa, the oldest sister, was played by Ms. Shannon Doherty.
What?
Yep. Of 90210 fame. Yes.
Wow. Damn.
I'm full of them today. Yeah, that's Shannon Doherty. That may have been her very first. No, she was like doing guest stuff, like TV stuff. She was in Little House on the Prairie and stuff. But they like the kids sounded like kids, and they all did a great job.
They did a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. You'd really believe that they were trying to really hold it together.
Yeah. Oh my God. And doing some like heartbreaking acting work, like especially at the end when the house is sinking and you think for sure they're going to die, even though it's a children's movie. It's like, it's all coming into the house. The mud's coming into the house. And like the tone in their voice, I'm just like, you can't not feel that. You feel their terror. I'm like, why was I watching this at 6 years old?
We later find out that Don had just like taken them all to a mud pit and was like slowly lowering them into a mud pit. Ooh. And the terror was real.
They did some real method acting on that. put these child actors in actual danger. And that's, you know what? It's like Stanley Kubrick, you know, you gotta push your actors to the edge to get that moment. Because the only thing that matters is that moment.
That's right.
You just gotta do it.
Don Bluth and Stanley Kubrick are one in the same.
No, it's like Don Bluth, I will say, let me just say this, maybe the Stanley Kubrick of animation.
I mean, it's a bold take, but God damn it if I don't respect that.
I mean, his focus on his perfectionism, his focus on character, on story, on style, using techniques in film that cost more money, but he was like, I don't care. I'm going to make a film.
Yes. He used so many crazy techniques for just his animation alone. He was using rotoscoping. He used mattes and color gels, all of the different lighting sequences, because he loves to play with like all these different background colors and lighting. Like Mrs. Brisby alone had 46 lighting situations. Mm. Like he just loves to mess around with shadow and light and color and I'm rambling now because I'm just so excited by it. But
no, you geek out about it because it's like, yeah, I remember watching the animation and being like the eyes are glowing and there's so many cool fire effects and light effects, like the eyes of the owl, Nicodemus's eyes, like all these little glowing points. And the most of the movie is quite, the palettes are quite dark.
Yeah.
Like everything is pretty dirty looking. I don't know if a DVD came out and kind of brightened everything up, but I kind of like how it is. It's very almost watercolored.
Yeah.
Watercolor, and then there's a lot of light that kind of peeks out from behind it. So yeah, I'm who does this anymore? who everything looks like garbage to me now.
I remember
and spoiled.
Everything is trash. I remember when I was younger, I would be particularly just transfixed by the cobwebs that are in this movie, because they were just they just looked so delicate and there was something very gentle about them. I remember just being just totally captivated by the way they moved in relation to the characters moving and how they played into a scene if someone got caught in them or I love it. He's just so good.
It's so good. I think one of my favorite, I have a lot of favorite, what's the word? I guess scenes or interiors or backgrounds, whatever you want to call it. But my favorite has to be Mr. Age's lab.
Yes.
And there's so many, if you go back and you watch that, there's so many cool details and you could just sit in that room and look for it. It's this perfect little laboratory. And I don't know. I like Mr. Ages. I know you think he's a jerk but I love him.
No, I really I think in rewatching this, I think when we first meet him, I was just this guy's a jerk. But again, we were talking about how Don Bluth makes his good characters have round or soft features. And even though Mr. Ages is cantankerous, he is this soft featured, round character.
He's a little Christmas ornament. Just to hang on that tree.
And he cares. He's just cranky.
I love it. And there's something very comforting. It's kind of a real doctor would be.
Mm-hmm.
Like a good doctor, and sometimes they're very brusque, you know, he doesn't have a very good bedside manner, but I don't know, I love how brutal he is. He's just like in the beginning, there's just something so comforting. He's like, yep, he's got pneumonia, can't move him for 3 weeks. I remember as a kid too, I was so confused because I didn't understand sickness or how sickness works.
Mm-hmm.
But I was pneumonia, why can't they just put
Timmy in a mouse wheelchair and get him out of there? You know, I just didn't understand. I was like, why do they have to move the whole house? I was so frustrated. Like, just put him in a cart and wheel him somewhere. But then she explains more than once. She's like, if he gets cold, he'll die, which seems a little dramatic. But like, yeah, it's like, I don't know, bundle the kid up, put a hot water bottle on him, wheel him to Auntie Shrew's house, or yeah, move the whole house. I don't know.
You got to make up your mind.
You got to do, I guess if you move the house, then you got to, yeah, you that's why you got to have the journey. If it was that easy, there'd be no story.
Exactly. And we need to have the story.
That's what Don Bluth wanted to bring back, is that hardcore story.
And goddamn, I'm glad he did.
He did.
So I want to talk about the rats themselves, because they are so full of character. They're very, there's something very parliamentary about them. Just, or I don't know if that's the right word, but like when we go into that entrance hall and Jenner is giving that speech, and you see all these like rats in large cloaks just like hollering out their opinions, or I thought that was like a very just like a cool thing to see, like, oh, rat society, orderly. Also, no lady rats.
Yes, I made that note too. I'm like, where are all the women?
No women. That's why Justin is so horny.
I think so, because like instantly, so she goes in right before she goes to Rat Parliament. She walks in the hallway. They run into Justin, and instantly, like, he doesn't even know who she is.
And,
like, to whom do I have the pleasure? Like, he's instantly like very subservient and charming to her. And then when he finds out, oh, she's Jonathan Brisby's widow, he gets super horny, because there is no one in this town who has more clout than Jonathan Brisby. You just say his name.
You say his name, it opens doors.
It opens doors. He is a tastemaker.
Mm-hmm. He's an influencer. Yes.
He is. No, that was the thing. Because as soon as anyone says his name, the only creature in this world who gets more respect than Jonathan Brisby is the Great Owl.
Yeah. Or Great Owl or Nicodemus. Maybe.
Yeah, but also, like, you have to remember when she goes into Rat Parliament, and she's like, oh, I went to the Great Owl, and everyone's like, no one sees the owl.
That's right.
Like, that's just right, because it's not only, like, I'm not really sure what the owl does.
He's, you know,
like, does he hang out?
I feel like every, like, mystical, magical forest needs at least one, like, go-to oracle. You know, like, there has to be that kind of like old man in the woods who will tell you what you need to do, or like tell you what you need to avoid.
Figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the guy. Cause to a mouse or a rat, an owl is like everything. That's their main predator, I guess. Right.
Yeah.
Like the apex predator in the wilds.
She walks in, you know, and she sees all the mouse bones. There are, like, there's a mouse skull when she looks down into, like, the bottom, that, like, pit where she walks in.
It is a mouse mausoleum in there.
Yeah.
It's like catacombs of Paris in his tree. It's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the only thing that saves her is she's like, oh, by the way, I'm Mrs. Jonathan Brisby. And he's like, what? He stops in his tracks and he's like, Jonathan, that son of a bitch.
Well, Jonathan, oh my God. Like, it really is so crazy that, like, every animal, except for the cat that never speaks, and maybe even Jeremy, because Jeremy is like a dumb hapless idiot. Mm-hmm. Just like everybody is all over Jonathan.
Yeah, no, he's as the British say, a ledge.
He's an absolute ledge. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Absolute ledge.
Absolute ledge, mate.
Yeah.
You do get like the sense of like, I mean, you're going out for a night on the town with Jonathan. He just talks to the bouncers and you're in.
You're in. And then, yeah, it's like, oh, Jonathan, like it, even, you know, after all the secrets are revealed, like when she's in Nicodemus's lair, you know, going back to the rats a little bit, she explains to Nicodemus, she's like, oh yeah, I read because my husband taught me to read. And he did all this stuff. Like he's a saint. He's like elevated to sainthood.
He is. Okay. Cool. Here's what it is. It is what in The Sopranos, Livia Soprano will constantly call Tony Soprano's father, Johnny, a saint.
Yes.
And
yes,
like when we learn more about their history, we learn that like that is not true. And like that they fought all the time. But anytime you bring it up, she goes, he was a saint. Your father was a saint. And I guess Jonathan Brisby was also a saint.
Yeah, no, you put respect on his name.
Yeah.
He was so much of a saint that, I don't know, and this was kind of a dick thing, I think. This is where he turns into a dick, is Nicodemus. And I wish they'd gone deeper into this, because I just touch on this for like a second. But he says that the injections that they got at NIM not only made them smart, but also, how did he put it? They slow down the aging process.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, he never told you because he never wanted you to know that you're going to get old and he's going to stay young forever. And I'm like, I guess that's nice, but also, she's gonna find out eventually. Like, she's gonna be like, oh, now I've got like wrinkly mouse face and gray hair and still hot and saint-like. Like,
I wonder like how much longer like their lifespan was, because like field mice live for like, I think it's like 2 years max. So
not very long.
Yeah. Honestly,
how old are all the kids?
Days.
Cynthia's like a week old. She just like grew fur.
Yeah, she just opened her eyes.
They gotta live longer than that for like narrative's sake. How old does a field mouse get? We'll never know.
I really think it's like 2, maybe 3 years. So if that's the case, how long was Jonathan's lifespan supposed to be? 5 years?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yep, you're right. 2 to 3 years. Wow. That's heartbreaking to know this.
I'm so sorry. I should have mentioned, because it will definitely come out whenever I record the Land Before Time episode, that like, oh yeah, I will be bringing biology into this.
Yeah, and then how old is, well, I guess Nicodemus is, well, rats are different. Rats live longer.
Yeah. Not that much longer, but they do live longer.
Yeah, so like, how old do we think Nicodemus is? Talking about the rats.
Nicodemus is 10 years old and decrepit.
Yeah, I was going to say, not less than that even. Like, so, okay, a brown rat lives 2 years as well.
Oh, shit. Okay. Nicodemus is 5. Justin is 3.
He's, I don't know, I feel like he's a little younger. Justin definitely has that youthful energy.
Yeah, so.
But also, like, I don't know, I would put him, if he were human, I would say he's, like, late 30s, early 40s. Like, right.
Yeah. Now.
Rhyme.
Yeah. Because he's like confident, but he's
so, yes.
Yeah, he's. Let's talk about Justin.
Let's get into it. Yeah, because we want to talk about the rats. The most important rat. I mean, they all have special qualities, but Justin. Yeah, no, Justin. That was one of the first we talk about this sometimes with, you know, like budding sexuality, like what is, you know, like what was like your root experience when you had, you know, feelings? And I remember as a child, being a child, not in puberty, and just being like, this rat is hot.
Yes. So many of like my first movie crushes were on like Don Bluth animals, Justin in particular. I loved his shirt. I loved what it did to his arms, but also he was charming. He had like a handsome face that wasn't so much like a rat. It was more like a fox or a, like a dog, but it was also like, he's still a rat. It worked still.
He was a very, yeah, like a very handsome, well-groomed rat. I mean, when he comes out, he has this very whimsical hat on. He kind of looks like a tin soldier.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the captain of the guard. I guess that's his captain hat. Yeah, I think it's like the way he's animated. And also, yeah, like you said, his personality, very, very charming. And the thing that I love about it is that it's his, and this is the sexiest thing. Anyone who's listening right now, the sexiest thing you can do in the world is to pay attention to somebody.
And he does that.
And he does that. He gives her instantly his focus on her. He's like, well, now we know why, because she's like the only female. All the Nimrats must have been male for a reason, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe they do that for animal experimentations. But yeah, he's like instantly, he's like, ooh, female mouse. She's hot. She's here. All eyes on her. I'm going to make direct eye contact with her. Mm-hmm. I'm going to repeat her name to her. Like just all these little detail things. And I also like that, like when the dangerous situation comes up later where she has to kind of save the day and drug dragon's food, he's like, you know, he has like a moment where he's like, oh no, you can't do that. It's so dangerous. And then she's like, no, I have to. And he's like, oh, okay. Like he just lets her be strong. He's not like, no, m'lady, I can't have you do that. You know, he's like, he like gives her fucking space when she needs it.
Yes. King. Yes. Yes. Yes.
You absolute king. Yeah, no, he does everything. Oh, I also want to say too, it made me feel very uncomfortable as a child to, there's also that point where she's going to go drug dragon's food and he's like, oh, you should take off your cape because
it's
not safe. And so she takes her cape off and she doesn't like undress in front of him, but like she goes up, she takes off her cape and she hands it down the hole to him. And I'm like, oh, she's naked now. That's weird. But I thought the way he did it was like very chivalrous. Like he wasn't like gaping, like he wasn't like just oogling her naked mouse body.
Which is featureless, by the way.
Which like, is completely smooth and featureless. She does not have mouse boobs as the erotic fan art that I found on the internet.
I
believe we can't possibly get into this. We can't possibly get into that. But anyway, yeah, no, she's very, yeah, it's a kid's movie. You know, they can't have
boobs. Yeah. They can't have boobs, but they can make their rats hot. So
yeah, but they're hot. They're hot because of their, and this is, and maybe this is the case for all Don Bluth movies. It's because of the character.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of the personality. It's not necessarily how they look, although let's admit it, it is also how they look.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, like, knowing that Don Bluth was involved in such films as Robin Hood,
I never knew that until today, so it, revelation.
Oh yeah, it's just like, of course he's got hot animals in his movies, because like he's been doing that for his whole career.
Yeah, I feel that Robin Hood was probably one of the first where it was just like, and Robin, I feel Robin Hood the Fox in the Disney movie and Justin the Rat from Secret of Nim have very similar qualities.
Mm-hmm.
In the fact that, yeah, they have winning, charming personalities. and are kind of similar physically.
Yeah.
And it's that confidence. It's like, if you had to describe it in a phrase, it's like that debonair confidence. He's like, I've got this. And you know what? You've got this too, because I believe in you.
That's right. Debonair is a great way to put that too.
Yeah, it's sort of like an indescribable human quality, in this case, animal quality, but a human quality. it's almost like, how would you describe that? Sort of, yeah, there's a humor there, yeah. Right? It's just like, ha ha ha, like bad stuff happens and I just laugh it off. I don't like a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, I like, here's the thing. I like a lot of people. I think I'm likable and I'm a very friendly person, but so a lot of people are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I like animals a lot because they're not like people. They're animals, right?
Yes, I like animals more. Yes.
Yeah. It's just like, there's just something about them that is like pure and comforting. And there's also, in animal world, there's also a lot of violence and there's a lot of chaos, but it makes sense in animal world. Whereas in human world, it doesn't make sense. I'm kind of going way deeper than I was going to go.
No, that's a really great point. Like, he has anthropomorphized these animals in a way that makes sense to us, but also like honors their natural behaviors. Like, moving day, they do have to like move like every season. They do have to like go hibernate somewhere. The owl has to go hunting and like dismisses Mrs. Brisby. Rats fight all the time.
All the
And baby, that's my political take for the day. Zoinks. Oh, the rats in Parliament. yeah, Don. I gotcha.
I think some of them are wearing, I'll have to go back and watch again. I think some of them are wearing robes and maybe there's a wig in there somewhere.
There is like those old like medieval hats that like women used to wear in court that were like pointed. Like, someone is wearing that in the background. But again, there are no rat women in this society.
I feel, this is a real opportunity to write maybe a sequel or a prequel or some kind of alternate universe. It's kind of like the Ghostbusters movie. You know what they did with the Ghostbusters movie, that thing that really pissed everybody off, where they made them all women?
Yeah.
I feel like we could do that with Secret of NIMH, except we could have the women.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they did make a sequel to Secret of NIMH. Called Secret of NIMH 2, Timmy to the Rescue.
We do not speak its name. Have you seen any of it?
No, but I see an ugly little worm on the cover and I'm already not into it.
If you just want to horrify yourself, watch the trailer and tell me how you feel about it, because it was not made with Don Bluth's permission, and it is horrible.
A lot of the sequels that were made from Don Bluth movies were made either without his permission or like outside of his studio. Like, he had no role in it. He just like either gave them the rights or was just like, what the fuck.
And I'm baffled by that, because how do you do that? Like, this is a movie that has your name on it, that was made by your production company. I know there's like 8 Land Before Times. Like,
oh, so many.
So many Land Before Times. How did they do that? Like, how do you get that? I want to know. I don't know anything about like movie copywriting or anything. But how do you do that and not get sued? Can anyone just make, like, if I want to do, like, The Shining Part 2, can I do that?
Sasha, I think we should.
they did do that. It's called Dr. Sleep.
Oh, that's right.
is okay. But
I do just want to shout out a few of the names, or rather a few people in the cast of Secret of NIMH 2, Timmy to the Rescue. Oh, Ralph Macchio, Dom DeLuise, Eric Idle, William H. Macy.
Holy shit.
Just a few, just to name a few. Yeah. So
they got some stars in there.
Yeah, I guess they had the budget for it. I
just don't understand. It's like, I know, well, I do understand. It's like they want to make money, but if you're not bringing that Don Bluth quality.
Yeah.
And he's always here bringing the quality. In my research, I found out that I'd always known that Don Bluth and like a few of his, not a few, but like a bunch of animators from Disney had left. And when they left, they were taking a huge financial risk. But I doing all the research for this, I realized that like all three main people in the production company like remortgaged their houses just so they could have the money to do everything like they wanted to do it. It was so expensive at the time. And it's such a huge risk, but I have such an enormous respect for that. It's like making an album or anything else. You're like, no, we're going to do this right.
Yeah.
I want to on this kind of, you know, using this kind of material with these kind of artists. And I respect that.
Yeah, they were like working out of their garages for a long time until they like got a studio space. Like it's crazy just how like into it they all were and how committed they were. And how it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out. It worked out pretty good.
Yeah.
I feel like they made enough to make more movies.
Which they certainly did.
Absolutely, and God bless them for doing so. But that was a huge risk, and it's just very charming to me that they chose to go out on such a limb for such like for a story like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I feel like. I think it was huge and risky because it is such dark material. And even like watching it now, I'm like, wow, this is for kids.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of blood and stabbings in this is like for an animated feature is really shocking.
I went online today and I asked people like what memories they had of Secret of NIMH. And I got a lot of responses that were like, I have crazy visceral and vivid memories of watching Secret of NIMH, and like being terrified by it. Like so many people who saw it were like, yeah, this scared me so much. So one of my friends wrote back that like she had watched it while eating a filleted fish and then a fish bone got stuck in her throat and stayed there for 2 days, and that's how she remembers Secret of NIMH.
Oh my god.
It's a lot of people have very strong feelings about it. And
did she like inhale it? She was gasping from shock.
I think, yeah. I didn't get that answer, but I'm just going to go ahead and say, yeah, absolutely.
I want to believe she like saw Justin for the first time and she was just like, like, just gave a sharp inhale at the sight of his debonair masculine,
his utterly just like, oh god, I was gonna say utterly palatable, I don't think that's even it, but just like his raw sexual energy.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, honestly, to me it's more like sensual. You know, it's that sensual confidence, and he's just like, you know what, I'm gonna take care of you, anything you want, you know what, like I'll be in charge if you want to, but I'm not gonna force you to do anything you want to do.
Yeah,
like, Justin is mad into consent,
and folks, that's why we love him.
We do. We, like we said, he is a king. He is the ultimate king. No man or person, for that matter, can ever top him.
I love a respectful king who respects boundaries and supports women.
Supports women's choices.
Exactly. Women's, yeah. You know,
our mouse bodies, ourselves, we do what we want. Women are mice, rats are men. And crows are non-binary. And I don't know. This is my gender study.
This is all correct. This is all correct.
that as well. Yeah, you know what? I would challenge this is my challenge for anyone else who comes on this wonderful pod and talks about their animal crushes. I challenge them to find another animal hero or heroine as sexy as Justin the Rat in Secret of Nim.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put that out there.
This is a challenge and a dare.
And a dare, yeah. No, I dare. No, and I'm not closed-minded. I'm very open-minded. I will listen to your arguments. I will listen to reason. But I also, you know, like any person, I have my cognitive biases, and my bias is that no one else will do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm spoiled for everyone because of this movie.
Amen.
No one will ever be good enough.
Just going out with someone, like, why can't you be Justin the Rat?
You know, just like on a date with somebody, and I'm like, so have you ever been captain of the guard in a underground cult of rats?
So how do you feel about puffy sleeves
and tall hats and no pants? I don't think he wears pants.
No, he does not wear pants.
Thank God.
Again, well, smooth rat body, we see nothing.
Nothing yet. You know, there's, yeah, like, where's, well, we shouldn't have this conversation. Where's
I mean, I know where it all is, you know.
It's not out there. It's not out there.
No.
It's in there.
So I guess that's a really good spot to just go to my fun segment, which we've already addressed. Who's the hottest animal?
In general?
No, in the
movie. Oh, we've already discussed
it. Exactly. Yeah, I think we both agree.
But
dragon. What?
It's been dragon the whole time. No, dragon is scary.
Dragon is terrifying.
Also, sidebar, dragon is also a huge fucking cat. Like, what are they feeding that cat?
That's like a Maine Coon on steroids.
Yeah, no, they got some, they're giving him some, yeah, some anabolics, because that is a muscular, bulky cat. But, yeah, I don't know, like, so, yeah, we agree Justin's hot. Who do we say, like, if Justin's busy?
If Justin's busy,
like, who do we call instead? Second, do we say, I don't know. I feel like they really positioned Justin to be like the heartthrob, so it's hard.
Yeah.
To, like, put someone else in his place.
I would say like maybe Sullivan, just because he's honorable, but like we don't know enough about him.
You know, I'm just gonna say maybe Jenner.
Interesting.
This is like a dark, yeah, this is like,
oh, the bad boy.
Yeah, I do like that too. I do like the two. Like, I'm not going to marry him. Not going to marry Jenner, but I would like, you know, I would let him take me out on a date, spend money on me. You know, we could have like some angry sexual, you know, thing.
Uh-huh. Maybe.
You know what I'm saying? But like, you have to, it's like Scar in Lion King, who I also think has that like dangerous, sexy quality.
Yeah.
It is very Scar-like. So I'll say that.
I will say the wolfish quality of Jenner works for me.
Yeah, very wolfish. And then when Jenner and Justin get to do that amazing sword fight.
Oh my God, yes.
That's the ultimate for me.
That's fighting over my honor. And like in a very specific way, I envision it there fighting over me. Just like a fun thing.
Yeah, no, just like a fun thing, like, oh, stop, like, two.
Yeah, guy, fellas, stop it. Stop fighting.
There's enough of me to go around.
Like, for shimmying everyone. In the corner.
Yeah, like, and Mrs. Grisby's just, like, just clutching her cape around her, like, oh, stop. yeah, that sword fight, in all seriousness, is amazing, and I do know that they were inspired by the Errol Flynn Robin Hood, which I actually did not, I watched not too long ago, which is amazing for the sword fighting and the swashbuckling. So, but yeah, you can totally see it. And like where he like kicks up the piece of wood, like Robin Hood would do a table.
So cool.
So cool. I don't know how they shot that. Like if they rotoscoped that, like if they got some humans in there and they just like animated over it.
Maybe. I do know that at some point they were working over 100 hours a week to, like, get Ooh. All of the details into, like, those more, like, elaborate scenes. So I'm sure they did, like, some crazy, like, work with it. I don't know if – I'm sure it was rotoscoped at some point, too.
Yeah, no, there's some things you're just like, wow, that's like very human movement that they're doing there.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, it's so well done. And yeah, it's a thrilling climax.
Anyway.
I have to stop. I'm not even drinking anything and I'm just waxing poetic about
these fictional rats.
Rats who are fighting for my fictional honor,
mm-hmm.
which I have none. Oh, I just looked at my notes here. Sorry, not to like sidetrack, but there's a note that says, did they give the rats DMT?
I guess we'll never know.
I feel like they did because they just shot him up with something and then all of a sudden they can read and solve problems and they have to go. There's a scene where they're just like stupid rats and then all of a sudden they go through a psychedelic portal and then they can read.
Yeah, that whole like transformation sequence scared me.
It's very scary. And that whole, I'll tell you what the scariest, well, there's a lot of scary moments, but one thing that was actually traumatizing was seeing Nim in the interior of it and how they were doing experiments on animals.
Yeah. And
I was like, wow, this is terrifying. And people actually do this. And then I remember like researching it at the time. I was like, oh yeah, animal experiments. That's a thing for science. And yeah, it is heavy stuff they're laying on these kids at an early age.
Animal testing is foul.
If Secret of Nim taught you anything, don't shoot a rat full of DMT and just let it go.
Please don't. Don't give rats drugs.
Don't give a rat acid. If you give a rat an acid, nothing good will happen.
Can you give a mouse a cookie? Absolutely. Can you give a rat acid? No.
It has human hands.
It has creepy little human hands.
Creepy little hands. Yeah, Nicodemus, gross hands.
They're very, they reminded me of like Rasputin's hands in Anastasia.
Yes. Oh, yes. A lot of Nicodemus Rasputin crossover effects they were doing.
Yeah.
There. But yeah, no, I wrote that too. I was like, Nicodemus, gross hands. So many questions about Nicodemus, because again, in the book, he's just a rat, but in this fine film, he's a magic wizard. I'm like, where did he get his magic stuff? I know that they're smarter because of the drugs, but like, where did the magic book come from? Where's the scrying mechanism coming from?
Yeah, when he's like writing in the book at the very, very beginning of the movie, but yeah. Like what he's writing doesn't match what he's saying. And also he's just like putting the pen on the paper and the words are magically appearing. That is something I wish they would have addressed, like how they became magical. Because we know they're smart.
Yeah, and they didn't. Yeah, we know they're smart. The magic is never explained. It's just there. And maybe that is what Mr. Bluth wanted. Like you said before, he wanted to add magic, to add mysticism, which is beautiful, which I love. Like any story I love, there has to be some level of supernatural, paranormal mysticism, or I'm not invested, you know? I need that spiritual energy to push the narrative through.
Look, I love being filled with a childlike wonder, and that only happens when I see magic. And I just want to say thank you, Don Bluth, for giving me the magic. Oh.
He gave you the magic, like Mrs. Brisby was given that magic amulet, which the magic was inside her, but then she had a physical representation of the power that was there all along.
Seisha, it was there all along.
It was like Dumbo's feather. She didn't need it, but just made her feel good, made fire shoot out of her body.
And he made her light up, and then people were like kneeling at her.
Yes. And she has a very Christ-like moment at the end, this resurrection, this Passion of the Christ moment. She like her whole body. No, that doesn't happen.
Every Don Bluth film is a Christ allegory.
I think so. I do think so. There's a resurrection of the stone. The stone, like Jesus, rises.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gonna happen.
She holds the amulet in her hands, and they burn like stigmata being bored through there.
Yep. At the end, she has bandages on her hands. Wonderful detail at the end. Her hands are all fucked up.
Yeah,
got burned, but yeah, she had fire stigmata on her hands. And she, much like Christ, had to suffer. Understand God's true love.
And with that,
I don't think we can really top that.
I really don't think we can either. Seisha, is there anything you would like to plug before we end this?
Anything I'd like to plug? I mean, I'm me. I'm Seisha. I'm in a band called Field Mouse. I'm also the best personal trainer in the world. And I'm on Instagram. You can find me, Seisha Heinzman. It's just my name, at Seisha Heinzman. So if you need, if you want to like, you know, talk about music or have questions about fitness stuff, or you want to talk about sexy animals, shoot me a DM. shoot me a DM, and we can, you know, I love, I know I said before, I don't like people. That's a lie. I like everybody. So shoot me a DM. I'll be your friend. If you have no other friends, I'll be your friend.
That's beautiful. Yay. We love friendship.
Friendship, the power of friendship.
And Christ. thank you so much for coming on, Seisha. It was a pleasure and an honor and a privilege to discuss this fine film with you. And
you. I do feel cleansed. I do feel very cleansed to get this all off my chest. So thank you for providing therapy for me.
Anytime. Well, folks, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week, somewhere out there.
Wow.
Bye-bye.